stop just for a second. Get honest with me. How many of you have sat on that meditation cushion for years, read all the self-help books, and tried to manifest your way to a better life, only to find that you're still stuck? You're still living the same anxiety, the same low-grade burnout, the same feeling of being trapped in a cycle you can't escape. The world has sold you a lie. That mind over matter is not enough. But the truth is, your mind is only the one part of the problem. Your body, your nervous system is holding on to that trauma or patterns and wounds that your thoughts can't reach. Today, we're talking to an amazing guest who's dedicated her lifetime to this exact journey. Ama Tasanti is a trauma-informed meditation teacher, a former Buddhist nun with 50 years of experience, and the founder of the Integrated Meditation Program. She helps people who feel stuck break through the patterns that mindset and meditation alone can't even touch. She's here to give you the straight truth on purpose. Welcome to the show, Ama.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the warm welcome, and I'm very happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to hear Buddhist nun. You are my first, and I don't know anything about that. I'm like, whoa, wait, what?
So
tell us about that.
So I am no longer a Buddhist nun. Mm-hmm. I am a civilian like yourself, but I spent 28 years in monasteries and with different levels of precepts. And being a Buddhist nun is a commitment to simplicity, to renunciation, to integrity, to ethics, and to living a life of harmlessness and meditation.
Oh, that's good. Okay. So it's not the Western world, not the Western world nunnery. Okay. I like it. So I'm going to get right into the questions with you, Ama. So you spent 20 years doing this, right? From that perspective, what's the biggest spiritual bypass you see people making today?
Boy, you dive in deep.
I'm ready for you.
So let me just speak from my own experience.
Okay, yes.
Because I can't talk about what everybody else is doing out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
I can speak about myself. So I went into the monastery like completely determined, like utterly 150% in. Right. And I had the confidence that if I completely gave myself to the meditation and the form and the discipline and the precepts, that I would experience profound liberating insights. And that would be all that I would need and want in life.
Okay.
And I did experience profound and liberating insights. I did. But what happened was is that those liberating insights did not shift some other fundamental core patterns. Mm. So the bypass, and it took me a long time to figure it out, is that one attributes the benefit of the insight as more than it actually is, and does not see the patterns that are not changing, and does not recognize that doing more of the same thing doesn't have a different result.
That's good. That's good. So that's like with anything else. Doing the same thing and expecting a different result. I'm telling you, you're here for me because I was thinking the same thing. And I was like, what am I doing wrong here? So I know this is for me. I know this is for me. And you are here for me, Ama, as well as the audience. I know you're going to get jealous, audience, but that's okay. It's all right. All right, promise.
So let me go into this a little bit more.
Okay.
Because the value of profound and transcendent insights is... there's no way that you can actually attribute a value to it. It's invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I had gone into a contemplative religious order, unconsciously thinking, or not thinking because it was unconscious, that if I bring into my world these transcendent insights, it will cancel all of the other layers of pain and suffering that I have. It will neutralize it. It will release, it will resolve, it will make it so those don't have any significant impact in my life.
Gosh.
So the bypass was unconscious, that was all that I needed.
Right.
And because as a young person going in, I didn't even have a language or clue or any understanding of different kinds of trauma, and had zero recognition of the epigenetic stuff that I was carrying from my ancestors, mm-hmm. and what I was carrying that was systemic, that was just embedded in the culture.
Right.
Like, I didn't have any language for any of those things. Gosh. Nor did I have an appreciation for the kinds of harm that was actually taking place in the monastery. But because there was such a deep-seated conviction that if there was these kinds of profound insights, that they would neutralize the harm that I had no language for, as well as the kinds of patriarchy or misogyny stuff that was embedded in the system, that somehow that would make it all worthwhile.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I got it. I got it now. I got it. Because I know that we talk about positive thinking here in the Western world, and that fixes everything. No, it doesn't. And I think it's a dangerous myth. I really do. Can you give us an example how good vibes only can actually prevent someone from truly healing?
Good vibes only. Well, I wouldn't use the language that it prevents, but what I would say is that it isn't sufficient to do the actual fundamental shifting.
Okay.
Because when you fill yourself with positive regard, when you bring yourself feelings of care and kindness and well-being, that has a positive impact. It's not negative.
Okay.
And so that is something that needs to be uplifted and celebrated, and people need to understand that it's important and figure out ways to cultivate that. But we can do that, and it doesn't shift the fundamental patterning.
Okay.
And that's the difference, because then you can have access to these feelings of goodwill. You can access feelings of care and kindness and joy and equanimity and any of the other good vibes that you want to put in that list. But you can still come out of that and feel like there's something fundamentally wrong with you, or that you don't fundamentally belong, or that there's something like you don't have the right to exist. All of these are like shapes of the way that our patterns can form as a strategic adaptation to surviving, not having enough of basic things when we
were. Right. And that's a deeper problem, right? And that goes into the nervous system. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So these fundamental patterns are formed early, like the first few years of our life, and they're strategic. And so if we have enough of protection and safety, attunement, comfort, soothing, people delighting in us, in who we are, and our characteristics and who we are essentially, and encouragement to express ourselves, encouragement to explore. When we have enough, and enough is not 100% of the time, enough is like 30% of the time. It's like, and enough is that when people actually do things that are harmful, that they acknowledge it and they repair. Okay. When we have enough of those five things, then we develop a way of trusting ourselves and trusting the people around us. And what happens is that our core beliefs about ourselves is that we are fine, we're good. And that if we don't have what we need, we can trust that the people around us will help.
Right.
And so we grow with this feeling of being sufficient, of being adequate, of having enough, of having of trust that the world is there to protect us, and that if we don't have exactly what we need, there are people who will help. When we didn't have enough, or when we grew up in situations where we were harmed by our caregivers, then we come up with adaptations that are strategic to survive that. And those adaptations are profoundly resilient. What that means is that the attachment formations that our grandmother had, there's like a 70% chance that it's the same one that we will have. That the attachment formations that we have, there's like an 80% chance that our kids will have them. Okay. Yeah. There's like an 80% chance that the attachment formation that we are born with is the attachment formation that we will die with. They are resilient.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. And so having good vibes is not the leverage that's needed in order to put the pressure to shift the nervous system, to change the pattern.
Yeah.
The same is true with meditation. Meditation is thousands of years old and it's very effective, but it's effective from the basis of having healthy attachment patterns.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yeah. Now I'm getting it. I'm getting it. Okay. Okay. All right. And how does that get how does that affect our nervous system and the habits?
Okay, so when we have attachment wounding, we'll use that instead of trauma because trauma is related to one type of attachment wounding, not all of them. Okay. If we have attachment wounding, it shows up in different ways. One of the ways that it shows up is that our system is on a constant level of alertness and vigilance.
Okay.
And another way that it shows up is that it shifts our capacity to track what's going on inside of ourselves and to track what's going on with others. So we can't actually tell what's happening.
Okay.
Another way that it shows up is that we live in this what's called a faux window of tolerance. It looks like we're fine. We're not fine. You know, our nervous system is jacked up. Our system is jacked up. There's a level of alertness and fear that's happening, but we think we're fine.
Yeah.
So we're not doing the things that we need to do in order to calm ourselves because we're not even registering that we're not calm.
Right.
It's such a like wallpaper. It's like so what's always there. We don't have the contrast that it could be otherwise.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm noticing that. I'm noticing that. I'm noticing my nervous system around certain subjects, certain things. And I'm now wondering, what is the next step for me to, I'm noticing it. I know there's something that has to be done. Is it more meditation? Is it more this? Is it more that? What is it that now I know that this is in my nervous system around this topic or this situation? How do I now navigate?
So let's just lift up the fact that you're noticing it, because that's really the first step is to recognize that all the things that have happened before, they've all had their benefit, but they haven't actually shifted your baseline pattern. So to recognize it is the first step of then recognizing what's the next thing that I can do that's actually going to be helpful.
Right.
So there are things, but I don't know if it is helpful for me to talk about the integrated meditation program, but I'm happy to, because that is a program that is designed to shift this baseline.
Okay.
So I've been a meditator nearly 50 years. I'm a meditation teacher. And at some point I realized doing more of the same isn't going to have a different result.
Yeah.
And so I looked at, well, what are the different models that help me understand why? And so I looked at different things. And when I came to a body of work that explained attachment theory, how it forms, why it forms, what happens when you don't have the basic things that you need, what the consequences of that, it was a big aha moment. And the aha was the recognition of a framework that explained doing more of the same is not going to have a different result.
Yeah.
Because the meditation, the purpose of it, and the tools of it presume a certain level of internal safety, a certain level of internal regulation, and they are not designed to shift those mm-hmm. fundamental things.
Right.
So I did my own attachment work and I found it mind-blowing because these baseline things shifted and it didn't take 100 years. It was just a question of, like, for me, it was like a year and a half before my mm-hmm. basic patterns shifted. Mm-hmm. And then I had clarity that I wanted to share this with others mm-hmm. because I was working with my therapist and the coaches that I was working with, and their frameworks were narrow. Mm-hmm. My framework is wide open.
Right,
and right. I wanted to bring a wide open framework to this process to support other people because I had conviction that it didn't only have to happen as a one-on-one relationship with a coach or a therapist, mm-hmm. that communities can learn how to help each other do this together.
Right. I can tell you that last night, as you said, I was thinking, I can't do this again. It's definitely not working. And I did begin to study something that made sense to me, like this makes sense, like intergenerational things that were happening. This makes sense why this is continuing. I started to look at the patterns, you know, of the family. And I started looking at that and it made more sense because now I knew that this alone wasn't working. It just wasn't. And I had to, it literally, me opening that area of my life up and saying, okay, I'm looking at this intergenerationally. And I, you know, was discussing it with someone who does work with intergenerational traumas. And it just happened that I started talking to them. It just happened. And we started discussing it. And I was like, I think I'm seeing what this is over here with me. And so opening that door to kind of like start to explore that has given me, I could feel the shift in my nervous system to different areas that I woke up this morning totally like, doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like that today. So I was able, like you said, to kind of like, this makes sense for me. And so I know I got to delve into it a little bit more and to start to progressively understand where, why I'm feeling this way. Cause there's nothing that I'm doing here. It's all intergenerational. So I'm carrying things I had no idea I was carrying. None.
That's right.
I had no idea. It was shocking to me. I was like, wait,
yeah,
it makes so much sense. I'm like, why am I upset? I have like an amazing life now. I'm like, what is going on? You know? And talking to this person, they right away, okay, I want you to check this out. And I began to delve into it and it started to open up. And I was like, that's it.
So
that's really it.
What I have been able to see, I'm not clinically trained as a psychologist. I'm a meditation practitioner. So I do like it with myself and my own observation, but six different kinds of trauma. The first one is situational. And that was the one that I had normally thought of as trauma, the stuff that happens to us directly. Mm-hmm. There's systemic, which is the stuff that's embedded in culture and laws.
Yep.
There's epigenetic, which is the one that you're talking about, that's passed down through the stuff that our ancestors lived through.
Yes.
But we have impact or imprints of that in our own system.
Didn't think about it. I had no idea.
The fourth one is attachment, which is this whole process of what happens when the patterns that are formed when we didn't have enough of basics when we were little. Mm-hmm. The fifth one is vicarious. It's like what happens when you show up to the scene of a trauma.
Right.
You didn't experience it,
right,
but you're right there with people who have.
Yes.
And then the sixth one is compound, when you have more than one of these together. Okay?
Yeah.
So what I sense, without having done clinical research or checked out scholarship, is that when we shift the attachment wounding,
okay,
we have more resilience We have an internal sense of safety and trust and capacity to be able to navigate all of these others that we're carrying. Okay. Yeah. Until we do that, it's a little bit like trying to swim upstream.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're trying to clear traumas out of our system without yet having a basic feeling of safety or trust internally.
That is so true. It's so true.
So it's not so that true. Attachment wounding by itself clears mm-hmm. them all, but it gives you the capacity to then go through and check what else is here that needs clearing.
Yeah, exactly.
And gives you the resilience to then be able to do what's next to do.
Yes.
To clear this stuff so that we're not being weighted down by the things that have happened in the past.
That is correct. I mean, I'm always waiting for the next shoe to drop. Always. And I think I was doing something in the day, and I did a show prior to this, and I was saying how I was talking about something, and it was around money, and my body started to tremor. And I'm like, my nervous system doesn't feel safe around talking about this. So no matter what I plan, you know, what I say I want or speak, my nervous system is protecting me because it goes like this. And it's like, no way. And it registers to my brain, no way, this is not going to happen. And then I feel it. And I shut down. Just like that. It happened just like that. I was like, whoa. So I know that I don't feel safe around money. I know that. Not a dollar. I know that. And what I came up with was, not came up with, but what I, as I dug around, my perpetrator, who's my stepdad, used to give me a dollar. Mm. After he molested me, he'd give me money. And it was still with me. And I thought it was over. And it's still with me. Yep.
So I'm sorry to hear
it's okay.
And yet what I'm hearing is the clarity of connection. Mm-hmm. There's, even though that you have done all this incredible work,
there's
still pieces that have not yet cleared out of your system.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so important, like you said, you know, that attachment, so very important because we don't think about that, you know. A young woman told me, she said, I'm healed from that. I said, don't be too quick to say the ED. You know, don't be quick to say that. I said, because we're healing and that happens longevity. It's a journey until we get to the very end, you know. And I said, don't be too quick. I said, because something will pop up and you thought you were, but you weren't. And I said, I'm here to tell you the truth, that it's really a journey of understanding. And like you said, understanding all those four, five areas of where, you know, where you're kind of responding and the nervous system and how it's holding that. And we don't even go to the nervous system. I had no thoughts of going to the nervous system, to be really honest with you.
Right.
Honest. Yeah. Didn't even think about it. Had no, you know, no idea until I experienced that and I was like, oh, I got some work to do here.
Yeah.
You know, I have some work to do.
But that's also the brilliance of your own capacity for discernment and clarity
mm-hmm.
is to recognize that as something that's an opportunity for shifting.
Yeah.
Rather than taking it as a personal identity, that's who you are.
Right.
You know, that's an imprint that's in your nervous system
mm-hmm. to
work with rather than a feature of your character.
Right. Yeah. And that's the attachment part I had to take apart. That is like, was my character, but that it wasn't. No. Yeah.
And so, exactly. And so if we don't have contrast to have mm-hmm. a sense of something that's different, then it makes sense that we identify with what it is that we experience.
Right.
That's who we are. And so when you are in a situation that supports you to have contrast, that supports mm-hmm. you to feel the things that you've never felt before and to feel it safely and to be able to register, oh, this is actually something that I can experience, then it creates the system's neuroplasticity to then be able to shift and reform based on the new experience.
Right. That sounds right. It's just
and that's the difference between good vibes and what this is. Right. So good vibes, as I'm understanding you saying it, is an ability to connect with positive emotions and fill yourself up with them.
Right.
This is the ability to saturate your experience in.
Oh, that's a great word.
And have your system reorganize itself based on the experience. So rather than it being on the top, it comes from within and comes out.
Wow. That's exactly how I feel. That's exactly how I feel. Exactly how I feel. You're amazing. You are amazing. You're describing what I'm actually going through right now. And I'm like, I don't know what it is, but that's exactly how it is. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not no longer top of the mind kind of thing. It's literally coming from the inside out. And I love that for myself. You know?
Yeah, that's definitely something to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, audience, you better be celebrating with me because this is so great. And Amma has come at the most appointed time because it might be universal. And you know that. You know I believe in perfect timing. So I want to get to, I know that the audience is probably going to ask, what are one of the physical exercises that you can like do, just simple do, to prove to them that the body is holding on to something? Because, you know, I gave my experience, but you can share yours.
Well, you know, what we can do is just a couple minutes of imagining a safe space. Shall we do that together?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So wherever you are, obviously, if you're driving, you're going to need to be careful that you're not closing your eyes.
Right.
But if you are in a space where you can do this, then I invite you, first of all, before you close your eyes, just to look around the room that you're in, look around the space and look over your shoulders. And now this time when you're looking and looking over your shoulder, so you check and see what's behind you, just notice the absence of anything that's dangerous in your visual field. So notice the absence of dangerous things. And then as you do that, notice what happens. Notice if your breath is a little bit deeper, if your shoulders are a little bit softer, if there's a little bit less clench in your jaw, in your belly. And now if you feel comfortable, allow your eyes to come forward and close. And then just as your eyes are closed, imagine being in a place that's just totally safe and protected. It's a favorite, very safe, protected place for you. It could be a cozy room. It could be a place in nature. It could be by the ocean or a rock. Could be with animals that you love, people that you love. And just as you are in this safe space, allow your body to feel what it feels like. Let it become vivid. See it clearly. Feel it. Feel it. Feel it against your skin. Feel it. Feel your body sinking there. Notice what you hear. Notice if there's any scent in the air, so that the imagination is as vivid as is available to you. And allow yourself to be there as clearly as possible. And as you imagine being in your safe space, notice what you notice. What happens to your breath? What happens to your feeling of weight? Do you get heavier? What happens to the tension in your jaw, in your shoulders, in your belly, in your hands? What happens to the sense of vigilance, of like just checking, checking, checking to see that everything's okay? This is contrast. When you feel safe, you can understand contrast, and that contrast can show you what you're carrying that you might not otherwise notice. So when you're ready, I invite you to open your eyes and just look around your space again and see if anything has shifted. If there's any more clarity, more vividness, more ability to notice your whole body as you're moving, more sense of comfort.
I like that. The ease. It was the ease. Everything was easy. I like that. That's really good. And I think I was breathing for the first time in a long time from my belly. It's different. It's different. I like that. That was really good. Thank you, Alma. And audience, I know if you were, I know you enjoyed it. So this is a great practice. That was great. So let's jump right into your new book about healing life into death.
Oh, thank you for asking. This is as a meditation teacher, I've had different experiences with people. Uh-huh. And one of them was with a landlord. So he was both my landlord and he was a meditation student and he was a friend. And he came to some of my intensives. And I left that property and I was in Hawaii for a few years. And while I was there that I heard he had a brain bleed. Mm-hmm. And so I was a friend of his, a meditation teacher. So I would wake up in the morning and I'd have these like insights about what would be helpful for him. So I was in Hawaii, he was in California. I wasn't talking with the family much about what was happening. It was just my own intuition. And I would get up in the morning and I would make these voice recordings and I would send them to the family and I would say, you know, I have no idea where these are coming from and if they're helpful, but here they are. And so I said many of them. And he continued to progress and he had another brain bleed and then eventually he died. And when his late wife, invited me to the memorial service, I was speaking and a number of people came up to me with tears in their eyes and they said they shared those recordings with me and they were so moving. Mm. So I transcribed them and I put them together in a little book and it's called Healing. Hello, Tom. This is Alma, Healing Life into Death. And it's the journey of meeting the edge right there.
Oh, wow.
And it's very unfiltered. I've done very little editing of those talks. So it's just me speaking to Tom as if I was talking to him in person.
Right. Wow. Wow, that's beautiful. And where can we find that?
It's not published yet. So it's
So we're on the cutting edge.
That's right. That's right. And you asking me and me coming talking about it makes me feel like I need to put this higher on the priority.
Yes. All right. Yes. So audience, you definitely have to pay. You gotta stay attention to this. You gotta mark this video or this episode and come back and ask, where is the book? We gotta ask that. So that's it. No more pretending, guys. You've heard it from a source of five decades of experience. The problem isn't that you're broken. It's been you using the wrong tools to fix it. True healing is integrated, a physical journey. Alma, thank you for challenging our perspectives and sharing your incredible wisdom with us.
It's been a real pleasure. I have so enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. This isn't just an episode. This is a call to action. Stop trying to think your way to a better life and start feeling your way there. Join us next week as we continue to keep it real. Bye for now.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.